You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We're going to talk today with a wonderful woman. All of her clients call her Dr. Cindy, and she is the First Lady of Sales, getting ready to put out a brand new book this month called Every Job is a Sales Job. So we're going to welcome Cindy to the Pilgrim on the 405. Welcome, Cindy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure to be here.
So tell us, what's it like to be in this cauldron of book release? Because it's coming out in September, right?
It's coming out the 17th, and I am in the middle of the cauldron swimming right now. It's really great and really exciting, and I've been very, very fortunate to have folks who have been responding to the book well and interested in getting it for their teams. And it's really, I feel very, very, very grateful for this opportunity.
Wonderful. Well, so this must have been, in addition to servicing all your clients, taking time to write. How did you do that?
I'm on airplanes a lot, so that's where a lot of it happened. But it was funny because the book came out of just needing this book to be told, like needing this story to be told. And so I felt so strongly about it that I don't want to say it wrote itself, because it certainly didn't. I definitely sat down and did it. But the message was so clear to me that this needed to be told. So it sort of invigorated me to be able to do it. So even when you're tired and you want to watch the movie on the airplane, you do take that extra hour or two just to crank out just a couple more pages.
Well, did you have a writing coach or other people who were helping you, or were you on your own?
My editor, McGraw-Hill, has been an unbelievable rock through this entire thing. And, you know, I felt like I was doing my dissertation again. The red ink kept coming back. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. But it was really, really helpful to just hone in that story once I put it down on paper.
Well, how did you get the arrangement, the contract with McGraw-Hill? Did you just send in a proposal?
I have an agent. So it was funny, you know, I'm learning this as I go. So before we started talking today, we were chit-chatting before the show, and I am learning this process as it happens. It's sort of like drinking from a fire hose. And I went through this whole thing of, do I want to self-publish? Do I want to actually go through a traditional publisher? And I felt like, at least for the first book, I wanted to go through a traditional publisher. So I sent out queries. I had 5 agents that were interested, and I went with the agent who got it. He understood the mission of this is bigger than a book. I'm on a mission to change the way people look at sales.
All right. So, well, tell us about the mission.
Got it.
What is the mission?
So it's the mission that sales is not icky, Will, and I thought it was, and you and I are sales folks, so we can say this. You know, I'm a salesperson. I have been for 20 years, but when I first got into business and was moved into a sales role, I thought it was this manipulative, icky thing that people did over there and I'm over here. And it's like, oh my gosh, if I had known that sales was a life skill, life would have been a whole lot different 25 years ago.
I once knew a group of people who put out a book called Sales is Not a Four-Letter Word.
Yes. And I thought it was. I had this image of, I call him Johnny Two Thumbs in my head, but he's the used car sales guy coming at you across the lot going, give you this thing. And I thought, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to sell that way. Uh-huh. And what I realized is people who sell like you and I do all day, that's not the way we sell at all. We sell by helping others. We're just helpaholics trying to figure out what fits for these folks' needs.
Right.
And once I realized that, I was like, how is nobody telling this part? How is nobody telling this story? And that's what I meant by kind of wrote itself once I started sitting down and actually thinking about it, this has to be taught.
You know, one of the things that I found that was really helpful was using the metaphor of an Easter egg. People come into sales training and they come in thinking that their job is to go get a sale, right? And the minute that they have that mentality, then that creates the other role, which is to keep you from making a sale. And so now we have this little game. But as long as we're playing that kind of game, it gets to be very boring. It's very anxiety provoking. But what I suggested is that people think about looking for prospects like a three-year-old would look for Easter eggs.
Love that.
They haven't got a clue to what an Easter egg is, the difference between a rock and an Easter egg. And so if that salesperson says, my job is to find out what an Easter egg, first define who my target market is, what do they want, what can I provide for them, what kind of issues do they have, and then all I'm doing is going down the list and finding out if they're an Easter egg or not. And if they're not, we're not going to throw them away, because sometimes those, I don't know how they do it, but those rocks sometimes turn into Easter eggs. But helping that three-year-old, my job was really helping that three-year-old mentality in a salesperson to learn how to search for Easter eggs.
I love that analogy. And it's funny because in the book, I talk about the inner five-year-old. So mm-hmm. we can make them three today, but it's that everybody is in sales because we were all children at one point. And kids are the best salespeople on the planet. I mean, if you've tried to reason with a five-year-old, you're going to lose. It's just, they're not afraid of anything.
Right.
And so what I realized when I had this like icky thought of sales, and then I started to embrace it, I went, wait a second, I've been selling my whole life because I was looking for the Easter eggs. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that's what sales was. I thought sales was hammer, nail, put them together. And once I realized I could go on this Easter egg hunt and I could actually help people, and if I didn't have anything to solve their problems, I could walk away. Uh-huh. That opened, I mean, it was just like the lights went on all of a sudden.
Right. It's not about you.
No. And I didn't want it to be about me. And that was the coolest part of it is realizing sales is not pushing something on somebody else. It is a discovery process of how you can help the other person. And what I want to do in this book is help everybody to use those same skills to get ahead. Whether you're truly selling in your role as a consultant or a coach or in the gig economy, whatever it happens to be, but also be able to get ahead even as an employee. And seeing that you're selling yourself every single day, you're just not calling it sales. Mm-hmm. And I really want to empower people to own that. And I mean, I half jokingly say sales should be taught in high school. I really do think it should be. I think it should be a required course.
Well, getting clear that you get to, number one, decide what you want. And then you get to go get what you want. And that always involves other people. You know, nobody gets what they want alone. They might try it, but it's not very satisfying. So, you know, learning that it's okay to want what you want, just because mama told you can't have a cookie before dinner doesn't mean you can't do it. If you want
That's
a cookie,
right.
You can get it. But somehow you have to help the other person find out what they want. And I think it was one of our sales gurus, wasn't it, who said you can get anything you want if you help other people get what they want.
That's exactly right. And I firmly believe that, Will, and that's the way I sell. And it's funny you talk about needing to know what you want. That's step one that I teach in the book is what's your plan? What are you trying to go get? Let's figure this out and help you to get clear and to give yourself permission to go after it. And I think, you know, sometimes we limit our own thinking as humans because we think, oh, well, I can't do that. Sure you can, you know. Can't put a person on the moon, but sure, by gosh, it's been done. So, you
know. We certainly can't go to Mars, right?
Well, no, not at all. But you know what?
I mean, you can never do that without the government doing it. So,
I think it's that idea that you can go, oh my gosh, you know, this is possible. But really, it's that permission piece of getting clear on what you really want and then going after it. And you said it. It's planning for what you want and then looking for those opportunities to be able to further getting closer to the Easter egg, if you will. And then it is how you help others to help yourself. And there's actually a section where I talk about nobody does it alone. It's this myth, and it's absolutely untrue. We have all had help.
Right. And part of what I've discovered in working with companies with EOS is that having a system for running a company means that you are involving other people. And I think that so many founders start off alone, and they're going to get in trouble if they can't turn the corner and begin to share that with others. I mean, I've found so many companies where the strategic plan is really two or three people at the top, and they don't share it with others. And when they begin to share it with others, they begin to, you know, look for what their values are and talk about that, talk about where they want to go, how they're going to get there. It makes a huge difference. And I think that's part of what a salesperson might be asking somebody, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of the work that we do from the consulting side of the house and the consulting firm is helping companies to live that, you know, live that mission. We really believe that every job is a sales job, getting everybody involved in the sales effort. And you and I were talking, we're kind of either side of the same coin. You do the operational aspect and we're doing the sales aspect, but they go hand in hand, all to execute the plan. But you are absolutely right that so often that plan lives in the C-suite. And the person on the front lines who has the best opportunity to sell doesn't have any clue. They haven't been cued into this.
Well, they don't understand how what they do helps the company get to what the company wants. And it's not what the C-suite people want. It's what the whole company wants. Yeah. Because until everybody's rowing in the same direction, until everybody knows where we're going, how we're going to get there, why we're going there, then you're not working with all the cylinders.
Not at all. And I think so often, so we always do an assessment with an organization. You know how this works. You know, you go in, you interview everybody. And so often some of the best ideas are from those frontline folks who are seeing it, who are in the trenches every single day going, I don't know why we press this button. This button over here does this and it's a whole lot faster, you know,
right.
and that never makes it up the food chain somehow. And we go in and we go, hey, let's press this button. And then it's like, oh, okay. You know, right. Just getting everybody to work more effectively and efficiently. But I think you make a very good point around, they have to know how their job affects it. And with regard to sales, I think we forget that every single employee and independent contractor and part-timer is a walking commercial for your organization.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times even business owners or managers forget that. It's like, well, they're happy at work. They're going and bad-mouthing your company. That's a commercial on repeat every day.
That's right. And so that has a lot to do with who you put into your company, right?
And if
somebody doesn't agree with the values of the company, then they shouldn't be there.
Yes.
Which really means that if you haven't defined what your values are and you're not talking about it and you're not using that to hire people, to fire people, to review them, to celebrate them, you're not doing that, then you never know. You never know. And if you've got people who don't agree with your values, they're going to chip away at it piece by piece.
They are. And I think what also ends up happening in that regard is you'll have people that are sort of legacy employees or they've been there a while. And I see a lot of my clients sort of excusing behavior. I call them the prickly people. It's like, mm-hmm. but so-and-so is really great at her job. If we could just put her in a corner and she doesn't ever talk to another human being, it'd be fine. It's like, that's affecting your culture, whether you recognize it or not.
Absolutely.
And you're allowing that to happen. And that sends a message about you as a leader by
right.
not addressing.
Well, it sends a message to the rest of the company about what can happen and what their expectations are and whether they're going to be held accountable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you're a prickly person, you get away with murder and that's not good. So,
yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, so getting really clear about what the values are. And that's true for salespeople, too. Because there are, like you said, there are many ways of selling. And yeah. just because somebody made the President's Club for the last 3 years doesn't mean that they're going to agree with your values as a company when they go out to sell.
Yeah. And there's a lot to be said about that. And I sort of have this very, very clear northern facing ethical and moral compass where we will walk away from money if it's not a right fit for us. We just won't take it. I won't compromise it. It's my name on the door, you know? So we're very careful about that, but I've seen other sales folks feel like even in their sales process, they had to compromise themselves or sort of felt like they had to play a game because that's what the market was. So there's actually a funny story in the book that I had. It was a salesperson in Texas, and she felt that she had to compete, and this is years and years and years ago, by sort of buying sports tickets and, you know, doing favors for the clients versus really doing a more consultative approach, uncovering the Easter egg, figuring out really what it was. She was sort of giving things to them and buying the business in a weird way. And she told me, she said, "I feel like I'm just sort of prostituting myself for this." And I went, "Well, why are you doing that?" And she said, "Well, this is the way they sell in this market." I said, "Who's they? Like, who wrote this rule? This is crap. Like, what do you mean?" And so we talked about why she didn't feel like she could be in sales, and she felt really icky about it. And her family sort of made fun of her even a little bit because they thought she was in sales. And so we took a step back, and as I was coaching her, I said, "Well, let's create a plan to sell differently. Let's just create a different way of doing this. Let's look at your moral compass. Let's look at your ethics. And let's create a sales process based on your values of what you bring to the table." Months went by, long after I was done coaching her, but she called and she goes, "It works, and I feel so much better about myself." And she was so much happier because it was in alignment with who she is. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that's the piece of crucial information for the listeners is be sure this is who you are, you know, make sure it's in alignment with who you are and who you want to be known as.
And if it's not, take responsibility and either change the system you're using or find a place that's going to fit with your system. Find, you must have some alignment of your values with the values of the company. And if it's not, don't blame the company.
I think that ends up happening a lot with folks who don't maybe necessarily have a sales background. Mm-hmm. They sort of get thrown into this role and then they feel like, "Well, this is what this company's doing, so we'll do that." Or, "I saw this person do this, so we'll do it." They haven't truly defined who they are. I call it what you want to be when you grow up. You know, let's figure that out first and then let's create a plan around it.
Well, have you found people who have failed at other things and wind up selling?
100%.
Right. So it seems to me that one of the first things to do is to help them to understand that you don't ever, there's no such thing as failure. Nobody fails. If you know, if you're clear about what you want, then you either get it or you get to learn how to get it. Yeah. All right. But we're so caught up with this win, lose, good, bad, successful, not successful, this dichotomy, when the reality is those dichotomies don't mean anything. There's not success and failure. There is you get what you want or you get to learn. And both of those things are good things. So, you know, that to me is one of the first things that we can be doing with salespeople, because so many of them are there by default. Something happened, and well, they were looking for somebody to sell.
That was me. I was supposed to be a management consultant and woke up 6 months into the job having to be in sales. And that's exactly what happened is I went, "I'm going to get fired if I don't figure this out." Uh-huh. And that's what I discovered, being able to go after Easter eggs versus going in and sort of hammering on people and such. But it is funny. I don't know that anybody goes to their parents when they're like second grade and says, "I want to be in sales when I grow up," unless, you know, their parents are in sales or something. So it's helping everybody to recognize. But again, I would argue everybody that's listening is selling. They're just not calling it that.
And well, I disagree with you. Okay. Because I don't think everybody is clear about what they want. All right, now, if you're willing to say that everybody is selling and some of them are doing a horrible job at it.
Absolutely.
Right, but not everybody is clear about what they want, right? And if you're not clear about what you want, there's no sales technique that's going to work.
I agree with you, but I think you're selling 24/7. And so they're selling the wrong thing. So, okay. You know, and that's the challenge. I mean, I talk about personal branding in the book and, you know, who you want to be known as and what your reputation is. You're selling. whether you recognize that or not, you're selling your brand. If your brand is inconsistent, if your brand is unreliable, but you're still selling it.
Maybe you have accepted what other people tell you as your brand. All right. And that to me is where you get into trouble. Because when you know what you want, then the next question is, how are we going to get there?
Yeah.
I mean, who are we going to talk to get what I want? And, and then what are we going to do about that? And what makes me different from anybody else who wants what I want? But all of those questions require somebody to feel pretty good about themselves.
They do, and they require a plan. And I would say that the folks who are selling unsuccessfully are the ones who have not created their plan. They haven't gotten clear on who they are and what they want and how they're going to go get it. I mean, part of the process I teach is planning and then looking for those opportunities. Once you've got that plan, you see the opportunities everywhere. It's like if you buy a pair of black shoes and then you see black shoes everywhere. You buy a blue car. It's called blue car syndrome, right? You know this from sales. When you buy the blue car, you start seeing them everywhere. It's the same thing. But I think those folks that are sort of selling a mismatched brand or they're not clear, it's because they didn't have a plan to begin with, or they bought into someone else's plan versus their own.
Right. And not being clear about what they wanted.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's not just a bunch of sales. It's not just a bunch of money. It's, you know, because you can get a lot of sales, just get a gun and go get them, right? It's a lot easier to go hold up a bank than it is to get clear about how to make sales if you just want money, right? There are more effective ways to do it than with sales. So getting clear about what I want, feeling good about myself, having a plan that I'm going to feel good about, that's got good consequence. All of those pieces, and it seems to me that it starts off with, I've got to feel good about myself.
I think you have to know the value you bring to the world. And I think so often with like solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, business owners, they feel like the value that they're giving is the product, or it's the service, or it's the, you know, I'm a great CPA, so that's why people come to me. They're not recognizing what it actually does for the other person. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big part of the plan is recognizing who you are, that, and like you said a second ago, that's different from everyone else. What are your unique superpowers that you're bringing to the world? What are your gifts? And then using those for good. And that's kind of what had happened to me, was I realized I was good at helping people and I wouldn't stop at anything until I got them what they needed, because I'm sort of addicted to helping folks. And I went, oh, wait a second, I can do this. That's what sales is. Okay, I can figure this thing out. Mm-hmm. But I had to get over that and figure out what my gifts were, which is helping others to reach theirs.
Right. That's right. And then helping people to feel comfortable with you, which means that you don't come in with the idea, I'm going to get you to do something you don't want to do.
Yeah. So it's funny, we're literally going through the steps, not even meaning to, but step three is establishing trust and listening to the other side. Uh-huh. And I think you've got to do that before you do anything. I mean, you can't sell anybody anything until you know what they need and what they want and figure out what that Easter egg looks like. And if it's an Easter egg and if it's going to be a good fit for you, does it fit in the basket, you know, all those things. But I think what's funny is so often we have a misconception that sales is a presentation. Sales is a story we tell.
Right.
I think sales is just a whole bunch of questions that you try to find an answer to. And I will gladly walk away from a sale, and I empower my people to do that. I empower our clients to do that. Because if it's not a good fit, you've then created a manipulative commercial. That person's not going to feel good that they bought anything from you. And they're going to go tell that story again and again. I mean, it's funny when you ask somebody to tell you a good sales story, a good customer service story, they have to think about it. But when you ask them for a bad story, they got like 10 at the ready. And I want people to be able to walk away with a good feeling, whether the answer is yes, no, or even a maybe. Let's make sure we send them back out into the world knowing who we are, what our ethics are, what our values are, that we heard them, we felt what their pain was, whether we could satisfy it or not.
Well, one of the things that I believe that everybody in the world wants is they want to be heard and understood.
Yep.
And if you as a salesperson can offer that to another person, you've given them a gift that they probably haven't gotten in the last couple of weeks.
So true. It's literally anybody that's ever, you know, been married, you can always hear the stories of, well, I don't want you to fix it. I just want you to listen to me.
Whoa, yay. Oh my goodness.
That was
a long path to learn. two people in the same room learning how to use computers, right? and somebody tends to vocalize their frustration. That doesn't mean go over and show them how to do it.
Good analogy.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah.
But I think part of sales, too, is helping to ask the right questions so they'll talk. And I think that's also where even some of the sales pros fall down, is they don't plan ahead for the questions. They haven't done their homework for the prospect or something. So they're not asking enough to invite them to dialogue. I mean, really all sales is an invitation to dialogue. It's a conversation. And I think you got to plan for that too.
Well, it seems to me that you got to plan to be very curious.
Absolutely.
And that will carry you a long way. One of the things that was important to me in the training that I had with sales was getting really clear about where people are. I mean, people can look at the distance between where they are and where they want to be, and that can be very painful, mm-hmm. right? Every week I look at how far it is between where I am and where I want to be. And on the other hand, I mean, my coach, Dan Sullivan, keeps reminding me that it's not a matter of that gap. It's a matter of how far have I come? What do I have to be thankful for here? And that leads to this whole notion of the difference between abundance and scarcity. How many salespeople go into a sales call or go into a telephone call with a scarcity mentality?
And so many.
And with that in mind, we're in a fight, right? Somebody's standing on my oxygen tube. I'm not happy. On the other hand, if one goes into it with the sense of there are plenty out there, there's more than I could ever do, I have abundance, then I'm really looking for people who really do want to transform what they're doing into the next step. How do you get that across to people?
So it's funny because I use those same terms in terms of scarcity and abundance, and I choose abundance. I choose to know that there's 7 billion people on this planet. That means I've got basically 7 billion people to help before I'm done. Right. I'm not going to run out, at least in my lifetime. So, and I think it is a mental shift of knowing that you have enough, that you are enough, and that you bring enough to the table. And it's funny because I was actually coaching a client of mine on that word, enough. And she's a business owner and she's very wildly successful, and that's great, but it was never enough. And so part of the coaching we were doing with her was recognizing when it's enough. When is the day over? When can you turn off the phone? When can you go to sleep? And then how many sales are enough? Where do you need to be? Because it's sort of the brass ring just kept moving and moving and moving and moving. And so part of what I needed to help her as her coach was to recognize the abundance that she had created. She'd never slowed down enough to go, oh my gosh, look at what I did in the years that I've had this company. Look at what I've been able to do. Look at the lives that I've been able to affect. So I think to answer your question, a lot of it to shift their mindset is to make them slow down mm-hmm. and actually look around. And I think salespeople in particular get caught up in that hamster wheel of, I got to make another sale. I got to make another sale. I got to hit a quota. It's not about the quota. Like you said, I think quotas are dead anyways, by the way. I think you got to go in with this.
There's no quota. Now there might be a minimum, yeah. right? But that you get below this minimum, we're going to have a conversation. But the real issue is that's our minimums. The question is, where do you want to be? What is
yes.
Why are you here?
You're not
here to make us money. You're here for some other reason. And this can become a vehicle for you. But what do you want? And helping them to get clear about where they want to be, what kind of things they want to do. You know, I was looking around. I just moved to a new session room, a new office in Tustin, California. And And so I opened up Zoom Info, you know, Zoom Info.
Oh, yeah.
So I opened up Zoom Info and I said, well, tell me, let's see, my target market is 10 employees to 250 employees and 10 to $100 million a year revenue. So let's see how many manufacturing companies there are within 10 miles of my office here. Do you know how many there are? 453.
Oh my gosh.
And so then I went to biotech and computers, came back 387.
Oh,
now,
goodness.
Do I ever have to get on a plane again?
No. Not if you play your cards right. Boy,
no.
That's amazing.
You know, and when I only need 20 clients, then it's really just a matter now of coming up with a strategy for meeting those people so that I can hear their stories.
Having that plan. But I think, you know, it's funny. You said a second ago, always being curious, you know, it's the old Glengarry Glen Ross, always be closing. Totally disagree.
Oh,
I think it's always be curious.
It's
curious. Always be curious.
Yes.
Because if you could be curious, you can figure it out. And even if they're not a fit, they might have somebody that is.
Sure.
A lot of our business comes through referral. If it's like, we're not a fit for you, but hey, this guy over here really needs your help or, you know, wants to grow their business. But what's interesting to me is when you stop, you paused. And that's what I want people to do is stop and look and let's just explore the math. And it's funny. I had a client that had a similar story where they were saying, well, the seasonality of the business is, you know, really bad. And it's you know, in winter, it's this and it's summer and this. And I said, well, let's test that theory. Let's just go look at the data.
Yeah.
And the data did not shift more than 5% up or down in any month over the 12 months. And it was hilarious. And she goes, I can't, we've had this mentality that this is the busy season and that's not. And
right.
I said, well, now you know.
So
no scarcity there.
I had a salesperson who was a phone. He did national sales on the phone. And he said to me the same thing. He said, well, you know, December's done. Well, what do you mean December's done? He said, well, because everybody's Christmas party and blah, 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 blah. I said, oh, really? Your last name is Rosen, right? And so you probably don't celebrate Christmas, right? So what do you do on Christmas? He said, well, like everybody else, we go to a Chinese restaurant for Christmas Day. I said, and before that, you celebrate a lot of Christmas parties? No. I said, geez, I wonder. Now, are there people out there who are not going to Christmas party? And it just blew his mind because it's like the inherited excuse for why we're not making sales in December.
Yep. It's so funny, the stories we buy into, though. But
yes.
When you stop and you pause and you have somebody hold up that mirror and go, really? Let's look at this reality. And I think that's especially difficult for salespeople, too, because we do get into that rhythm. We get into our own rhythm. So that's where, you know, I know at least for me as a salesperson, it really helped having that coach. And I still have a business coach, same as you. Like, I really value having somebody be able to hold that mirror up and go, hang on, let's look at this reality. Let's see if this is actually real or fake. And then let's make a plan around it.
Yeah. And what he also tells me is that once you get clear about what you want, you start telling yourself what you want, then your eyes and your ears will find it.
100%. It's everywhere. And that's the challenge. But if you don't have a plan for it, so it's so funny, you know, I live in San Francisco and the gig economy is alive and well here. Clearly, you know, everybody's an Uber driver. Everybody's a Lyft driver. Everybody's a graphic designer. You know, that you can't turn around in this town and not run into 5 graphic designers, you know? But what's funny is I love to talk to these folks when I meet them in line at the coffee shop. And I want to ask them, you know, what's your plan? How do you get clients? Oh, well, it's by referral. I work by referral. What does that mean? And so I, you know, and I'm sales gal, so I'm sitting here being curious with them in the line at whatever coffee shop we're at. But it's funny because it's not intentional. And so even with them, it's not a plan to get referrals. They're not proactively asking for referrals. They're getting referrals. They're not working by referral. They're just getting referrals. And I think that happens with a lot of professional services where we think our service speaks for itself, or we, you know, so we're not making a plan to go get that business, kind of like your friend, Mr. Rosen, who wasn't making a plan to go get business at the end of the year. He wasn't looking at it. He was buying into this. Well, we work by referral at this firm. Well, December, nobody sells. Challenge it. Challenge that theory.
Right. Well, and how many people in the professional world, as things change in the marketplace, I mean, think of CPAs, right? CPAs, there was a time when you had to come to a CPA to get your taxes done if you have any complexity at all. Now, goodness gracious, all sorts of things are changing to make it possible. And so they really have to begin to think about, if we want more business or we want to retain our customers, we're going to have to get really clear about what we offer. And then as we shift our offerings, we're going to have to go find people who have a need for that and want to do those kinds of things. So
I completely agree. And there's one more step that I think a lot of those folks skip in sales, and you know this one, it's that they don't even ask. They go and they'll have the conversation and then they leave it dangling out in the universe with the hope that maybe this person will send them business or refer a friend.
Yes. That's my strategy is I hope. All right. Well, I'm hoping that going to these various networking things much. I'm hoping to get some great clients from it.
Yeah, it's not a strategy, nor is it
successful. It's not a strategy.
But it is funny because they'll get all the way to the end of that amazing conversation, Will, or they'll, you know, totally get this prospect's needs. They'll answer some, you know, especially a CPA, they'll answer a tax question or something. And then it's like, okay, well, keep me in mind. See you later. They don't ask them for the business. And I think we forget that we are in a society, especially in the U.S., we are in a society where it is ask and receive. When you go to the gas station and they ask you to donate a dollar to a certain charity, there's an ask. Mm-hmm. When you go to, the fast food store and restaurant and they say, do you want to add fries? That's an ask. I'm married. Somebody asked somebody a question at some point. You know, there is a question and answer in our society. And I think so often people shy away from that and they expect either their service is going to speak for itself or that, you know what I'm here for.
Well,
I hear that.
They are afraid that they're not are going to be told no.
Yeah.
Right? Because I don't like you. I mean, so, you know, I put a big sign, the piece from Dante's Inferno, you know, that the sign at the beginning of hell. And it says, abandon all hope, ye who enter here. That was the sign that was on my training room door.
Nice. I like it.
This is not about hope. Not about hope.
I think that's fantastic.
We're going to learn from it.
There's what you do and there's what you don't do. And it's funny because people are so afraid of that word no. And I had to change my mentality about it because I was told no so many times when I first started selling, it wasn't even funny, you know? And what I realized is no is the best gift you can get. Fail fast. If the answer is no, great. Then I'm not coming back at you again and again and again and again. I can move on to somebody more profitable.
No is so much better than let me think about it.
Oh, worst ever.
This is a great thing. I'm gonna run up the flagpole. I'm gonna talk to my partner, my boss, my dog, my wife about it, and we'll get back to you next week. I mean, I just say it's a great thing. I'm so glad that you came by. Thank you very much. I'll call you.
That's a no.
When I started sales, I got a big 3-ring binder, like one of those big 3-inch, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then I had a debrief sheet for each call, and everyone that was a no went into that binder. And I still have it, and it's full with all of these no's that, you know, they're there. But that's part of the fun.
But I think, you know, folks have that stigma around the word no. And we have to remember that we have all been told no in our lives, all our lives long. I mean, if you were 2 years old, you were told no 20 times a day. But I think the challenge is we internalize that no, we take it personally. We think, oh, it's about me. You know, I didn't do something or I'm not enough. it's about whatever you're trying to sell them or whatever you offered to them is not a fit today. And that's okay. It is absolutely okay. And you would rather be told no than let me think about it. Let me run it up the flagpole. Let me talk to my dog. Oh my God. You'll keep going back. And with professional salespeople in particular, I think they fall in love with potential of clients. And they're like, oh, well, you know, if I just keep going back to Will, then, you know, one day I could get this client. If the answer is not yes, I don't care what they told you. It's a no.
Well, and plus, you can take the responsibility for it. If they don't want it, you don't have to force them to say no. You can say, I don't think this is going to be a fit. And if they want to do it, they will argue with you. And if not, you know where you are. And that means that we're back to the Easter egg. I mean, I can decide that's not an Easter egg. That's a rock. And if it's a rock, I can promise you, no great, PowerPoint with all the bells and whistle is going to change it into an Easter egg. No asking the right questions is going to turn into an Easter egg. No pressure, you know, coming back every week and looking to see, are you still a rock?
No. Yeah. Rock is a rock.
Yeah. There's just so many people out there. There are so many. If you only have three people who could possibly buy from you, it might be different.
But I don't think that's the case in really anything. I mean, there are so many opportunities nowadays. And like you said, just the research that you had done on ZoomInfo, I mean, good grief. They're everywhere. You're not going to run out of clients ever.
Well, I mean, these are not like mom and pop. These are substantial businesses. I mean, I used to be in awe of people who say, oh, yes, most of my clients are multi-million dollar companies. Well, okay. So that's the only ones I work with. They're multi-million dollar. And somehow they don't seem to be a whole lot different from the mom and pops. I mean, they're
business
people.
Is business. Yep. It's still human beings. Wall Street, Main Street, doesn't matter. Yeah, I agree. And it's funny because people will ask us, like, what's the perfect size of a company for us? We've had clients that were literally two people. And we've had ones that were thousands in across countries, even.
Same way.
And it's really funny to me. It's like, but it's more about the fact that they're willing to do the work to grow their business and they want the help.
Yes.
That's the client. And and it's the same thing when you're selling to somebody. It's doesn't matter if they're a business or a consumer that does this or does 20 times that. If they're an Easter egg, you find a fit.
That's right. Well, this has been a lot of fun, Cindy.
I have thoroughly enjoyed this. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's always a lot of fun. We'll have to do it again after your book hits the bestseller list and all of that, right?
Put it in the universe. Put it out there.
I'm sure you have a plan down to make that happen.
Little bit. Spreadsheets and all.
Super. Well, all right. What would you like to tell folks about your book or about anything else?
Well, I'd love to tell them that if you're an owner or leader and you're trying to get your team involved in the sales effort, this is a good way to start that conversation because it's a book that's sort of it's a self-help book masquerading as a business book. It's to help the reader to be empowered to sell. So if you've got folks that are going, but I'm not in a sales background, or even if you yourself feel like you don't have a sales background, this is the way to help you embrace your inner salesperson to get what you want. And that's the first thing I'd want to tell them. And I tell them to go to drcindy.com. There's blogs, there's information there. Follow me on social media, Dr. Cindy. And there's free videos. There's all kinds of things, YouTube channel, but it's about helping folks. And by the time I'm done with this, well, we might need a new word for sales. I want to change the way people look at sales.
So you got ice cream up there. You got birthday cake.
All of the above.
DrCindy.com. Excellent, excellent. Well, thanks for being with us. It's wonderful. We'll have to get together sometime for a coffee or a meal or something. We get down to Southern California.
I'll meet you on the 405.
Yes, that's right. Well, that's where we are. So there we are, folks. One more person to share with you how to make business thrive in California.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist.